What's up, everybody? It's Megan and Sim here today with the Student Loan Planner Podcast, our Financially Free Friday episode. Today, we're going to do something a tad bit different. We're going to do a reaction video on a couple different student loan topics that we I didn't curate them, so it's going to be a surprise for both of us. About student loans, I think mostly these are student loan topics. So we're going to go through and just read a couple things that folks are posting on the interwebs, right, on Reddit, and give our take on either what that person should be doing or how crazy that situation is. You know, who knows? We have no idea what we're in for. But thanks for joining with me and experiencing this with me for the first time.
Reacting with you. Yes, I'm a huge fan of Reddit. I use all the lingo. Long-time lurker, first-time poster. So I'm curious how this is going to go.
Oh, yeah. I think Reddit has been a really interesting source of information for a lot of people, especially with student loans. Like, it's kind of like a messaging board when it comes to student loan related things, to just kind of either vent about your situation or ask questions about your situation. Now, there's always going to be like the disclaimer, like, be careful what you read and be careful what advice you're getting on things like Reddit or things like public forums, because you don't know if that person responding is, you know, educated in the space. You just don't know their background. So take it with a grain of salt. But that's what we're going to do today. Since we're educated in this space, we're certified in student loans, we're going to really jump into this. Let's start it out. So this is obviously going to be, we're going to read what this section is going to say, and then we'll react along the way. But for those watching on YouTube, I will have the post of the visual, so you could see that as well. So that's another plug. Like, if you haven't followed us on YouTube, go do that, because we usually post cool videos on YouTube about everything. So let's kick things off, and let's start with this Reddit thread is titled Save Plan Panic. And this is me starting to read. So anyone on Save Plan right now is probably in a full-blown panic. The Save Plan has been working for me and many others to pay off our student loan debt. Now I fear what's going to happen. I don't have an extra $700 to pay on my loans each month. I'm a poor single mother of two. I work full-time and still end up putting groceries on a credit card every few weeks. I'm panicking. I absolutely can't afford to go back to how it was before. I've got 16 federal student loans and one private loan amounting to about $73,000 in total. Refinancing isn't going to solve the problem. I don't want to lose the low interest rates I already have on some of these loans. Also, how can the government legally do this to us with all this uncertainty? There has to be something to protect the people. This isn't okay to allow us to enroll in a plan and then take it away. Fair. If there was a problem with it, then it should have been blocked from the start, like forgiveness was. I'm in full-blown panic over here. It won't be okay. I won't get through this. Other than student loans, I'm about $103,000 in debt, mostly from medical, credit card, and my car. And yes, I have health insurance. It's just a lose-lose situation. I cannot dig out of this hole, and I'm fighting hard as I can to get out of it. Oh, this
I hear
heavy.
Her fight. You can hear the fight. She's a single mom. She's working multiple jobs. She's trying to do all the things they say you're supposed to do. Pull yourself up or whatever the narrative is. She's trying to do that.
Yeah. Go to school, get a better job, get a better, higher paying job. You know, so I'm sure that was the intention. You know, go to school, find something that you like to do that could pay you well. So I think a lot of people are in this panic mode right now with the Save Plan, and rightfully so, because we have no idea what's going to happen. We don't know if they're going to repeal this plan, if they're going to make adjustments to it. So tell us a little bit about some of the advice that you're giving folks right now, Sim.
So my favorite word that everyone hates, it depends, right? It depends on your situation. You know, she said she's single. So my first question is always, what's your marital status? Are you thinking of getting married? Because that can impact things down the road. You know, if this is really a hardship, right, there could be the strategic use of a forbearance, maybe. There could be, you know, other plans that she could switch to. We talk about IBR as a backup plan for some people because that plan came into place by an act of Congress. So it would be mega difficult to get rid of. Not impossible, but do you feel like Congress can agree on anything right now? I feel like IBR is probably here to stay for a good while. I know people are having trouble switching plans right now because everything's kind of paused. So again, that could be where the forbearance is strategically useful.
Yeah. And if they do repeal the Save Plan, I'm curious where the $700 is coming from. Like, maybe that's what it was before, maybe on
probably
like
standard.
standard. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Maybe like a standard plan. The good news is if the save plan is repealed, we will still have an income driven option, at least. An income based repayment is very safe, like you were saying, Sim. They might bring back repay if they were to repeal save, because that's what save replaced. So it could make sense for them to bring back repay potentially.
That could be very more favorable for her than even IBR because of how they calculate the payment, depending on when she borrowed. I don't know if she was a borrower after, you know, 2014 or whatever. But yeah, repay is great because there would still at least be an interest subsidy.
Yep. Interest subsidy, affordable payment. It was very close to what the save payment was going to be. I would say, I know this is a weird time. The good news, weirdly, is that since they're debating this, payments are at zero a month. So you're not required to pay right now. So this is a great, great, great time to be saving up some money to either throw aside into savings or to throw towards some of your other debts to maybe work some of those down, because we're at 0% interest. No payments are required if you're on the save plan. So that could be a bit of a relief between now and whenever this is decided. May not be super soon. We know we have a hearing coming up October 24th about what their interpretation of the block on forgiveness is, but I don't think that's going to give us like exactly what's going to happen to save. I think that's going to take a little bit longer, maybe after the election, maybe very beginning of the year. So that could give you some months of time where you don't have to pay and then focus on other things like saving up to prepare. But just know that there's going to be other options. And with the private student loan, maybe take a look at that to see if it makes sense to refinance that guy. Maybe the interest rate could be a little bit lower, or maybe you can restructure the payment terms of the one private loan that you have, not the federal, like we talked about, but just the private. And then if you have, you know, maybe take a look at your car loan. If your car note is pretty large and it's something that maybe you could sacrifice getting a lower cost car, lower cost reliable vehicle, like that could be something that really lightens the load on your monthly cash flow. We talk about how cars are a wealth killer, right? That whole episode.
Cars are huge right now. I'm seeing such an impact to so many of my clients' cash flow just because of what they're spending on cars. And that's not even like a judgment statement against them. It's just that interest rates have gone up. And so even to get like a reliable vehicle for your family has become very expensive. If I were this poor lady, I would go into the forbearance at least just to get that $700 back into her cash flow, because she said she's putting credit or groceries on her credit cards. Even if there's interest accrual on her student loans, it's not going to be as bad as the interest accrual on her credit cards. And so that's kind of where the downward spiral really starts, is with that credit card debt.
Yep. So hang in there. We're going to get some answers soon. I think you do have some fallback options, and take advantage of this time period where we don't have to make payments. So next on here, we've got the title, I Am So Lost, and it's about private student loans. I recently defaulted on my student loans and I'm so lost. I've been having so much anxiety and it's driving me insane. Here's my situation. I originally had $72,000 in private student loans through Sallie Mae, which I also had a co-signer for. I paid for about a year and then my credit was good enough that I qualified to refinance the entire amount on my own through Citizens. On top of the student loans, I have about $10,000 in credit card debt, years of trying to support myself off of little, and eventually having a very bad spending habit. I was really depressed and shopping became my outlet. I did my best to pay, but after a while, payments became too much. I pay everything else on time, but I just couldn't keep up with this loan. I was paying $750 a month, which was more than my rent. I just couldn't keep up. I started ignoring payments and buried my head in the sand. It's so stupid that I did that, but I just ignored all the phone calls and the letters. But eventually, it caught up about 6 months later, and I got a letter that my loan was in default. I just checked my credit report and it's listed as charged off as a bad debt, profit and loss write-off. I haven't heard anything since. No phone calls, no letters, nothing. I have no clue what to do now. I don't know who owns the debt. I can't afford to settle with a lump sum right now. Ideally, I'd like to just do monthly payments again and restart the loan, but I'm sure that isn't an option. Any guidance on what I should do? Like I said, my anxiety is so bad. I'm so ashamed that I let this happen and I haven't told anyone. I'm single, living alone, and a working professional. I'm a therapist between my full-time and part-time jobs. I only gross about $55,000 a year. This makes me feel like a total failure. Any advice is welcome.
I feel like such a mom the way I want to like respond to this, but like I want to respond to the person first and be like, you are not a total failure. Like, okay, choices were made. It's in the past. It's done. You've done your self-reflection, but you are more than your debt. You're more than, you know, the choices you made in the past. I think what's important is that you recognize where you are now and that you make a plan moving forward and give yourself some grace.
Yep. And private student loans are, they are less flexible in the sense that they don't have income-driven repayment plans. That's probably why your payment was higher, because it was probably on a pretty squished payment schedule, like maybe a 10 or 15 year or something like that. So they don't take into account income when they're giving you that payment. It's just designed to pay it all off within that time frame. And if you don't pay, it does go into a default status. They basically, another collections company takes over, and their job is to try to collect on that debt. There's a couple things you could try. So it is a private loan, which means they can't forcibly make you pay this unless they sue you. You could very well get a court order to show up to court or to start making payments on this loan. There is a statute of limitations. It depends on the state that you live in. A lot of times it's between like 2 to 5 or 6 years, where basically if they don't reach out within that time period, they can no longer sue you for the debt. Now, there's some nuances here. This is where if you're considering either a settlement or even bankruptcy, which that could be an aggressive route, or what I think folks will call in the legal space a strategic default, you definitely need to consult with an attorney. So if you're planning on taking any of those routes, consult with an attorney. But there are options with bankruptcy or with a strategic default. It just has to really make sense. So strategic default, what I mean by that is, again, you have a statute of limitations of like 3 to 6 years, depending on your state. If they don't reach out within that time period, they can't sue you. And so technically, you still owe the debt, but they're not going to come after you for it. And it falls off of your credit report.
Your credit's still going to tank, though, during that time, though.
Absolutely. Your credit is going to be trashed because you didn't make payments on that loan. Things stay on your credit report up to 7 years. Bankruptcies stay on your credit report up to 10 years. So sometimes folks or an attorney would suggest, hey, let's do a strategic default where we take the hit to credit, but after 7 years, if they don't sue you, you know, this falls off your credit report. That's a really extreme example of how to take care of this. Again, highly recommend talking with an attorney to see if that makes sense. Otherwise, you can get back into a payment schedule. A lot of times you just have to give the collections company a call, which if you don't see it now on your credit report, you will see it at some point on your credit report where the debt is being held at that point.
You have to remember, these guys, they just want their money. They want something. That's why they purchased the debt. They're not expecting that. I mean, maybe I shouldn't say this. They're not expecting that they're going to get all of it back. So they are very willing to negotiate with you, even though they may play hardball. They may say that you need to make a lump sum payment. You can get back into a repayment schedule. One thing to watch out for, though, is that if you're getting like phone calls, there's a lot of scams right now, like more than ever. And so if you're getting a call and you think it's from a collector, don't answer it, but call them. So have the phone number. You're making the call to them if you want to do this, but don't let them like call you because it may or may not be them.
And get things in writing. Like if you have given them a call and talked about a payment schedule, get something in writing that spells that out, because you don't want to just make a payment to somebody over the phone and not understand what it's going to do for you. Like, is it just going to interest? Is it going to restart your statute of limitations?
Is there a prepayment penalty if you win a lottery ticket and want to just pay the whole thing off? And I always tell people this, when you're advocating for yourself with anything, right? Student loans or the IRS, whatever, always document everything. Who did you talk to? What's their employee ID number if they have one? What time did you talk to them? Write this stuff down, because you don't know if you're going to need to refer to it later as a CYA or if you have to file a complaint.
So I think, and I know, like speaking to the behavior, like there is a lot of shame around student loans and also going into a default situation or being late on payments. Of course, like we've always been taught, pay your bills on time, like don't go into debt in general. It sounds like you are trying to do the right thing and it's frozen you. It's like it's putting you in this paralysis kind of mode. Take some baby steps. I think this is, you know, a good starting point, getting some advice or trying to kind of speak your truth and getting some ideas on what your next step should be. And then I think the next step from here is just to contact who owns the debt. So try to look at your credit report. If it's not showing up now, it should show up soon. Give them a call, find out your options. Don't make any decisions on that one call, you know, but find out all of your options, get things in writing, and then figure out what your next steps are going to be. And it's going to get better. Keep pushing, keep moving forward, keep working really hard, growing your income. This is something that I think you can get out of.
And give yourself a self-care line item in your cash flow plan or budget, whatever you want to call it, because I see this happen a lot, the shopping as an outlet or as a coping mechanism. And lots of people have outlets, right? It's not always shopping. It could be like cigarettes or drinking, whatever. Lots of people have vices, but the shopping, because that's almost like a, I'm working so hard to pay off my debt. You just go in the opposite direction because you've burned out. So there's some balance. If you say, okay, I can spend X dollars a month on myself for fun money. You have to give yourself fun money because you will burn out.
Yep, that's a good tip. Let's jump into another thread about kind of general financial advice. So this is titled Worst Financial Advice Ever.
Ooh, spicy. I'm listening.
I know, I'm curious. So give me some believable financial advice that's actually terrible. It's probably good to address some common misconceptions. I'll throw out a couple. Number one is taking out student loans to pay off credit card debt so the interest stops growing. Let's talk about that one. Yeah.
That's illegal. Okay. So at least for federal student loans, right, there are stipulations as far as what the loans can be used for. It has to be used for the cost of attendance. So tuition, fees, books, room and board, whatever miscellaneous, you know, your little school gym, those sorts of things. I know people do this, right? But you're not supposed to.
Yeah. I think you've got to use student loans for the cost of attendance. And I think that's just matter of fact, what we got to do. So don't use it to pay off credit card debt. There are other ways that you can pay off credit card debt efficiently. First is getting together like a game plan for how much you're going to put towards those cards. You can consider maybe a personal loan that has a lower interest rate to kind of consolidate the credit card debt. Even if the personal loan interest rate is higher than you'd like, maybe it's like 13%, but your credit card interest rates are 25%, that still makes sense to do the debt consolidation loan. You could also look at like 0% interest balance transfer cards. That's only if you've gotten your spending situation under control and you know that this isn't going to be a compounding problem. So there's other ways to get out of credit card debt, but don't use student loans to do that. Now, next up here, so number two, I guess, hot take or worst financial advice ever that this person is writing is taking out a reverse mortgage to go on vacation because it's free money. Ooh, that's pretty bad advice.
Yes, because so for those who don't know what a reverse mortgage is, you are basically getting, you're taking out your equity and getting it in the form of like a payment over time. So it's a reverse mortgage because instead of you making a payment, you're getting a payment, but it depletes the equity in your house. And so when you die, instead of your heirs getting the house, it's going to go to the bank unless your heirs want to like pay off the mortgage and because the home's sentimental or something.
Right. You can also only do this if you're of a certain age. I think you have to be like 60 or 65. So this is not something that like anybody can go do. Now you could do like a HELOC, like a home equity line of credit or like a home personal loan. Those are different. That's basically like leveraging again the equity within your home, but it's more of a loan versus like a reverse mortgage is more like a paycheck coming from your equity until it's depleted. But you have to be of age because they're kind of banking on the fact that you'll pass away and whatever's left, you know, the bank keeps and they get to sell. So kind of an interesting thing. This person said, you know, generally bad because you can't discharge student loan debt in bankruptcy. I think that's going back to the other one, the student loan to pay off credit cards. But that is true. You can't discharge student loans in bankruptcy, or at least not very easily. It's very, very, very challenging to do that. Credit card debt, you can. You can restructure in bankruptcy, or you can get charged off or settle.
There's some kind of way out.
Yep. And then his note on the reverse mortgage is the reverse mortgage is basically using your house as collateral for a loan. Very risky. That's also the same comment for like a HELOC or a home personal loan.
I don't feel warm and fuzzy about those. To me, when I hear someone doing a reverse mortgage, I think this is someone who either by behavior or circumstance hasn't been able to save for their retirement.
Yep.
Break the glass, last ditch effort.
Yeah. Now, a couple other comments. So people were encouraged to like comment hot takes here. So another one was don't accept a raise because it will increase your taxes.
No, I hate that. Okay. This is like my biggest reaction today. I hate when people say, I'm like, you only ever pay a percentage in tax. Right. You keep most of it for yourself. Never do anything to purposefully lower your income.
I know.
Right? To lower what you're bringing in for your family. Yeah. It sucks that Uncle Sam and then your state Uncle Sam, they're getting a cut of it.
Yeah.
Man. I mean, okay. Even like high income professionals, they, you know, between like federal and state, like they could be paying well, like 50% in taxes and that stinks, but you're keeping the other half. That's still for you.
I know. We literally hear this a lot. Like, people will be bummed about getting a raise or a bonus because they feel like it's going to make their student loan payment go up, which is true. But just like you're saying, like, your payment's only like 10% or less of your income.
And it's not even your full income. It's discretionary income. So it's even like better.
Yeah. So the other 90% is going to your household. So it is not a bad thing that you got a pay raise. Always go for those pay raises. Make more money. What do you always say? Get your bread.
Get that bread, fam.
Get that bread. So yeah, never try to make less. Another one, which actually we've talked about before, is paying off your credit card in full each month will hurt your credit. That is
hashtag
a big misconception.
Fake news. No,
fake
that
news.
Is wrong.
Yes. If you pay off your credit card in full each month, what the statement balance was, you avoid interest. That is the whole point. You want to avoid interest paying that statement balance off in full. Good use of that credit card is going to affect your credit score. So paying on time, paying in full. Another hot take kind of related to credit cards down below is if you pay your credit card minimum, you don't accrue interest. So that is not correct.
That's also fake.
Fake news. Yeah. If you pay your credit card minimum, you avoid late fees and you stay current on the credit card itself. But you definitely accrue interest if you're just paying the minimum, because it's usually like 1 or 3% of the balance. Like, it's not a lot. And so you might be looking at your statement and it gives you that number, statement balance and minimum payment. You want to pay
it's
the
usually like 25
balance.
Or something. Like, it's really low for a lot of people. It doesn't touch any accruing interest. That balance is going to grow.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And so that's why people get shocked. They're like, what? How did my balance get to where it's at? Or why is this extra bill in here of interest? And it's pretty expensive. It can get pretty expensive with the interest cost. Okay. Last one. And then we'll move on to the next one. This was just another commenter's. My father-in-law, who's a doctor and makes good money, told my husband and I to take a HELOC out on our completely paid off house for a down payment on our next house. We're going to keep our current house as a rental property. I don't want to take out a loan against it unless I absolutely have to. He was like, well, where's the money going to come from for the down payment? I told him we would save up our money like everybody else. I know you probably have a hot take on this, or not hot take, but like a take, of course.
Yeah, I totally agree with the poster. They have the means to save up, just save up and borrow like everyone else. I don't like when people use like property as collateral, because that means it can be taken if something happens.
Yeah. And this is advice that I see a lot on social media, leveraging your existing home equity for the next property, which can you do? Yes. Could it make sense? Maybe, depending on somebody's circumstances. Again, like, personal financial planning is very personal. But if you are debt adverse, you prefer to not pay interest on the down payment, basically, that you're going to use for the next house, and you have the means to save up for it relatively quickly, like, just do that. Do that instead. That's way less stressful as well. So
I think my hot take is that everyone wants a hack, but not everything needs to be hacked. Sometimes, like, boring is the best way. Oh, that's, I like that. Boring is best.
Yeah. Boring or vanilla. Vanilla is best.
Yeah.
Oh, last one on this thread, only because it's related to student loans or degrees, universities, which is totally relevant to us, of course. So hot take, or like bad financial advice for this post, it says, I was told it doesn't matter what you study at university as long as you get a degree. And also the typical do what you love and the money will follow, or some variation of that. Both of these are really stupid and put people into such a bad place. Much better to treat university like any other investment. It will cost you X and you will get Y, but keep in mind the risks and the costs, I would say.
Mm, okay. So this one's hard for me because I'm a cerebral academic at heart, and I just like really value education sometimes for what it is and not just its economic value. I don't think everything needs to be decided in terms of economic value. Not everything is a financial decision. But having said that, that's still worthwhile to think about. Like, I'm investing this time and this money. What is my goal at the end? I'll use myself as an example. I went to an Ivy League school and I got a liberal arts degree that I don't use, but it's relevant now. Modern Middle Eastern studies. Hey, hot topic. Everyone's talking about it. And I have a degree in it, but I did nothing with it. But what was valuable about my education was that because I was privileged enough to go to like a big name school, I have a really powerful alumni network that I tapped into when I graduated. And so for me, this my degree, which a lot of people would say is like stupid and useless, I was able to get a lot of job offers because I leveraged my network. And so sometimes it's not just the degree, but it's where you're going to school and what connections you make.
Yeah. And I'm kind of on the opposite side of things. I went to a state university, Kennesaw State. Hoodoo, where are the Owls? We didn't have football at the time I was at the school, but now we do. Hopefully we're going to be good one day. So my cost of attendance, I feel like, was very low. And I was also in state. And we have the HOPE scholarship here in Georgia, where if you have above a certain GPA in high school and you maintain that GPA through college, you get a lot of your tuition covered. So I prioritized staying in state. I had no intentions of going out of state. I'm probably the worst example of like choosing a college, but I didn't have a strong preference where I went because I was going for business. I knew that for sure. A business degree, it is what you make of it. The connections are really where it's at and like learning kind of the foundation of stuff. And I think the grit of getting through school is another thing. Like, can you do it? Can you do a 4-year degree? But would I be more successful if I spent 10 times the amount, maybe 15 times the amount, and went to Harvard's business school or another like Ivy League school? I don't know.
Maybe your mental health would be worse. Ask me how I know.
It could have been. Yeah, exactly. So there's trade-offs, right? Like, and I wasn't a sorority person. Were you a sorority person?
No, I didn't have time.
Yeah, I was to say, and there's no like flack or slack, whatever it is, you know, if you were, but that wasn't important to me either. Like, I wasn't going to Alabama for Bama Rush or anything. Like, I was not interested in that. So you've got to like weigh those decisions, like what's important to you. And it's hard to know too when you're young, when you're starting
18,
out.
Like, I have to make a decision. What experience do I want to cultivate?
Yeah, but these are things like you as a parent too, because we work with a lot of folks who are trying to save for education for their kids. Like, these conversations you want to start having like earlier and maybe more often, like while kids are in middle school, high school, start getting an idea of what y'all value when it comes to education as a family. Do you value like the location, the school itself? What exactly do you value? And then put your money there.
Yeah, because some things, like I say this a lot too, like not everything's a financial decision. Like, one thing I think is important is that an 18-year-old learns to be independent and learns how to be an adult, because this is another hot take, but like all over the internet where people are like, I hate adulting. I think there's like actually a subreddit, it's called adulting. And like, to me, I get like so irritated because it comes across as very immature. When you're 18, do you know how to cook and clean? Do you know how to pay bills? Do you know how to manage a schedule while you're like working and in school and whatever? And so some people choose to like stay home to save money on room and board, but maybe that's not for some people the right decision. Maybe they need to be kicked out and learn to fly.
Yeah, and be a little more independent. Man, I look back on my young self. I was learning. I remember like the things I used to cook because I was trying not to spend money, right? I was broke college kid, like things I would cook at home, total girl dinners, right? Like pasta.
Lots of pasta before I was gluten-free.
Not even like sauce. I would have like some random vegetable and like some kind of protein, but it was total girl dinner, like just trying to figure stuff out. But I remember making my first like Alfredo dish. It was like an Alfredo pasta with shrimp. And I was like, wow, I'm living large. Like, this is great.
I actually made, this was near the end of my college, but I would make really fancy toast. Again, before I was gluten-free. So I would have bread, I would toast it, I would smear goat cheese on it, and then pour a little olive oil and balsamic vinegar. And that, I was like, oh, look at me, I'm so fancy.
That sounds good. I thought you were going to say avocado. I was like, don't give us millennials that name.
No, I did not. I was not that cool. I'm not a hipster. I did not think of avocado toast first.
Yeah.
Goat cheese, though. That was me.
Yeah. Well, cool. All right. So next one. And then I think we've got one last one and we'll wrap up. So this one, kind of the reverse, is going to be best financial advice or decisions you've made that can be replicated. So we talked about the worst financial advice. Now we're getting into the best. This person didn't really give their own. I think they were just throwing this question out there to the interwebs. It's on the Henry Finance, which is, Henry is short for
high earner, not rich yet.
Yes.
Please tell me that someone said spouse, because that's like my first thought is like the best.
Literally, that's like the first thing on here. Yeah.
Oh, yay. So, okay.
Choosing a great spouse. Life's a lot easier with a great partner is the first one that's on there. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I totally agree. Sometimes choosing the wrong partner. I mean, we talk about this a lot. One of the best financial decisions you can make is to take your spouse on a date, because divorce is expensive.
That's literally what it says next. Yeah.
Divorce. Does it really? Okay.
Yeah. It says divorce is probably the number one way to get laid out financially.
Buy flowers or whatever your honey wants, right? That's going to be cheaper than divorce. So nurture that. Yeah, having a spouse. And I feel like it's funny to say have a spouse because I feel like the common dynamic I see with a lot of people is you have like the spender and the saver, the one who's like super involved in the finances and the other one's like, what's a Roth IRA, which is fine. But I think having that dynamic brings you balance. Because on the one hand, the person who's like super focused on like, you know, being responsible or doing the things, right? They get it done. But they have their partner who brings them down to earth a little bit and reminds them like, hey, we can spend some money on ourselves and have fun. So I think that it brings balance to the unit.
Yeah. And I feel like that's very common in relationships where one is one way, the other is another. That's probably why we work so well. I think that's a great start. I think the next one that somebody posted was spending 10 minutes going through my company's 401k plan summary plan description and finding out I can do the mega backdoor Roth method. This is like sophisticated right here.
Love
like this
language.
Person, I know. Do you want a job?
Summary plan description. Yeah, that's like the plan brochure. It's the rules of the plan in your 401k. It lays out like when you're eligible to participate. Is there a vesting schedule? What the vesting schedule is for employer matches? Does the plan allow loans or, you know, withdrawals, those sorts of things? What happens at separation of service? And then like this person mentioned, mega backdoor Roth, which really is not an option for most people unless you have like a lot of income and a lot of cash flow to do so.
Yeah, but definitely something you can build in your plan, work with a financial professional on to see if that makes sense for you to do. Next, kind of along the same lines when it comes to savings is reoccurring deposits and contributions every time I get paid. So the money is out of my everyday account before I can spend it. More than just the 401k. I increase them very often. So by small increments, so I don't feel it. It's super simple, but it adds up over time. Absolutely. It does.
People are so adaptable. We hear the phrase new normal, and we use that a lot with like terrible situations, like someone gets a terminal illness or something, but people adapt, right, to a new normal. So you don't see that money coming in. You might eventually forget that it's going somewhere and you learn to live off of what you've set aside or dedicated for your actual day-to-day spending.
Yeah, I think this is why we really like working with folks like at the very beginning of their journey too, because we could set up these habits early on. So it's not painful to add them in later, you know, because that's what the kind of the norm is like somebody gets started, they've got their big girl, big boy income that's coming in, and rightfully so, they treat yourself mentality, right? Like, man, I've worked so hard to get to this point. I'm going to spend money. I'm going to, you know, treat myself a bit, which is totally fine. Nothing wrong with that. But I think we really, really enjoy starting to implement savings early and set it up on some kind of auto schedule like 401k that can come directly from your paycheck. Easy peasy. Let's try to rip off the Band-Aid and save more than maybe just the match, right? Let's start saving a lot more. Same thing with saving deposits going into just regular old savings. Like if you know every year you want to take a $5,000 annual trip to Europe or $10,000, whatever it is, go ahead and set up those reoccurring savings from your paycheck. Most companies allow you to do this, or payroll systems allow you to do this, where you can direct a certain amount per paycheck to a different account, another checking account or another savings account.
It's like a multiple direct deposit.
Yeah. So it's a great way to get money out of the spending account, which is like checking, for example, and throw it into something that is a little more out of sight, out of mind, but separated to where, you know, it's accessible for when you need it. Great advice here. Really love it.
Reddit can be reliable sometimes.
Yeah. Another one on here, and we'll move on, is don't feel panic when the market goes down. I just started investing in a personal brokerage account in February 2020. What timing? Oh my gosh, really? Right before COVID. And my investments went down 25% basically immediately. I was so panicked and was staring at it every day. Stopped looking at the account, but kept putting money into it. Woo! Wow, that's great.
They bought when it was on sale.
Now those investments are up almost 50%. Oh, that's such a good example. You know, if you've got a savings plan, an investing plan, you want to be like either dollar cost averaging or just having a plan to consistently put money in that account. It doesn't matter what the market's doing, because historically the market will be going up. Long term will be going up over time.
No guarantees though. That's just historical trajectory.
Yes. Now, taking emotions out of it is really important because it, like, I was worried this person was going to say they pulled all their money out and then, like, realized later that they shouldn't have done that. But no, they, like, grinned and bared it. Is that the term? Grin and bear it through, like, the really hard time. And it did rebound. That's the point, is when the market goes down, it's going to fluctuate, right? The market goes down. We're putting money in. Like you said, Sim, we're buying on a discount. It will eventually rebound, hopefully, you know, if we're diversified in a well-diversified portfolio.
We just don't know when the rebound is going to be, which is why we caution against pulling out of the market, because that's how some folks miss the recovery. They panic sell. Eventually, historically, there's a recovery and you miss it because it's sitting in cash. And I always like to remind people that investing is a long-term activity. How you define long-term, there's going to be so many definitions. I like to think of it as at least 5 years. 5 years or more. So if it's money that you don't need for more than 5 years, I don't even like think about it. Set it and forget it. Yeah, you can check in maybe every year or so, but checking it every day is like useless almost, unless you're like a day trader. And I don't believe in day trading.
Yeah. Well, and I was going to say too, like, timing is important. This person was able to do that because they didn't need that money. That wasn't their emergency savings. That wasn't their bill pay money. So if you're investing into something like a brokerage account or into your 401k, you need to understand the 401k money, like retirement money, that's off the table. Like, you're not supposed to go in and get that money until you're of age. But brokerage account money, it's invested. So there's risk associated with that. There will be fluctuation. You don't want to be panicking about what the market's doing with that account, because ideally that's money that you're saving for maybe intermediate term goals, like things that are a little down the road. And you've got your emergency savings that you can fall back on for like the things that are happening now if you needed it. So
if you're sitting there like panicking about it, it tells me that there's something wrong with the strategy here. Something is not where it should be.
Mm-hmm. Let's listen to this TikTok of somebody who's got $140,000 in student loan debt.
I have $140,000 in student debt and I'm not stressed about it. So let's talk about it. And I'll show you my favorite everyday makeup look. The first thing is from Merit. I'm absolutely obsessed with this. Federal loans that most people have. And then I also have private loans. So lucky me. This is the Milk Contour Stick. I really like this because I'm trying to do clean beauty. When I said I wasn't stressed, that was kind of a lie. I just think it's so crazy how we are signing kids up who are 18 years old with $140,000 of student debt before they really realize how much money that is and how much it's going to take.
Yeah, so we hear this a lot. Folks kind of regret going towards the program that they're going towards, either if it's undergrad or like going to grad school, like they kind of regret getting started and having to pay commit because you don't commit to all the loans all at once, but you're committing to the journey.
I went to a private school in Connecticut and I did that because I was in a 3+1 program. So I basically got 2 degrees for the price of 1 degree. I still got to finish at the same time as all of my friends who were just getting their bachelor's. At the time, I thought going to the private school because of the program was a really good option for me financially, but I definitely didn't realize how much $140,000 really is, or else I probably wouldn't have done it. But I've been paying off my loans since I was a freshman. Yes, a freshman in college. So I kind of want to tell you what my plan is, how I'm doing it, and how I'm trying to get rid of these as quickly as possible. I am 24 and I didn't move out of my childhood home until I was 24. I stayed home for 2 years after school and basically was able to put all the money I was making towards my student debt. And honestly, I didn't save. Which I definitely don't recommend. Definitely put some savings aside.
This is what we talk about a lot. The balance of like putting money towards loans and then saving for your future.
Kind of learned that the hard way. When I moved out, I kind of realized just how hard it is to pay rent and get your own groceries and basically be an adult and have this looming student debt over your head.
There's your adulting.
Also, let's do another pod on why did contouring become so popular? She has such beautiful skin. Like, show it off, girl. You don't need to contour. I swear it's the Kardashian family. Anyways.
Yeah. Or like the multitasking with these makeup tutorials is fascinating to me. I cannot do that.
I prefer the cooking ones when they're like, let me talk to you about your life. And while they slice a watermelon, like that's more my speed.
Right. That's like being in the kitchen with somebody versus in their bathroom with somebody.
really hard, honestly, to look at my friends who are getting married and buying houses and just knowing that I'm extremely responsible and I'm not going to be able to do that. I can't do that, and it's not going to happen for quite a while. Essentially, what I do every single month is I put one paycheck towards my student debt, and then I do one paycheck towards my rent, utilities, groceries, and I kind of try to save just whatever little is left that I can. I know it's really hard for some people to put a full paycheck towards their student debt, but I would really recommend it if you can. I honestly just have it taken out right away.
Just like we talked about, automated savings, or you could do this with bills, automated bill pay.
My question, though, is what is her income? Because what is that one paycheck? But the habit, I respect the habit.
I also want to know what she's doing. Like, is she working at a hospital? Like, is she a PA? Like, what is her job? What is her income, like you were saying? And is this the best strategy? Or should she have gone
for forgiveness?
Yeah. Could she have considered PSLF? We have no idea. This sounds like it's a bachelor's degree, which means that she was only probably able to borrow $30,000 in federal student loans, and then the rest is private. So if that's the case, this may not be a horrible strategy, because private student loans are not as generous. There's no forgiveness associated with them. So that this may not be a bad idea. I'm just kind of curious more.
If she's like a PA or an MP, she has to have a master's. So there might be some more federal mixed in with that.
And she said 24. So that's 4 plus 2 years. So it has to be like something medical.
Some kind of master's.
So maybe PA. Yeah.
So she's probably making a decent income then. So the math could go either way as far as forgiveness or payoff.
So I'm definitely pressed for money, unlike my other friends, but I'm really learning like how to be responsible with money, which, you know, I wish I learned when I was 18. For anyone who is starting their payments now for the federal loans, I really recommend putting more than what's due towards it so you can pay down the principal, because that's the thing that's going to get you, because you're just going to be paying interest over time when you could have brought that down a lot earlier.
Depends. Totally depends on if somebody's going towards forgiveness or a payoff approach. So take this with a grain of salt.
What is your interest rate? If you have like, you know, those early FFEL loans, you didn't borrow very much, you're at like, you know, 3%.
Yeah. Or those 2020 rates, the COVID rates are really low.
Yeah, those were good too. You know, I'm not saying not to pay off your debt, but you know, 3% versus what could you get if you invested that? I don't think it's a slam dunk. It depends on your goals. That favorite word, depends.
Yeah. And so this is another thing I'll mention, like she's recommending things, but she is not a financial professional. She's going off of her own experiences. So you have to keep that in mind. Like this is what she's choosing to do with her loan situation. It is not advice that you necessarily should take, because your situation might be different. You've got to always keep that in mind. But I do commend her for being so disciplined. This is really impressive, the discipline that she has for putting money towards these loans and trying to get them done. She's making sacrifices that a lot of people are just like, frankly, not willing to make.
Yeah, I think what's important is that she has a plan. You know, we can argue if it's the best plan or not, but you can always change your plan. It's better than not being intentional.
It's really, really hard to have to say no to things. And I definitely feel a lot of anxiety over it that not a lot of my friends, well, actually none of my friends understand. This Merit Blush is quite literally my favorite, but I'm responsible with my money. I'm paying so much more than I need to be paying towards my student debt every single month. And just knowing that I'm not going to be able to buy a house for a while is something that's been causing me a lot of stress and a lot of anxiety. I also just think that it is the most wild thing that schools cost as much as they do these days.
Yeah. That's the trade-off. Like, say, like she's unable to save. So she's choosing to prioritize her loans, which is, you know, again, for her may not be a bad strategy at all, but it comes with sacrifices of not being able to do the same things that her friends are doing, not being able to think about purchasing a home, putting money towards savings. So she is setting her other personal goals aside. And that's going to mean that those things are going to be delayed for later. But later, she's not going to be strapped with her loans anymore. So there's like give and take to every strategy. And she's choosing that this is the best strategy for her. I'd love to know a little more about your like work situation and income situation. But it sounds like you're kind of along the way of almost being done with these things. So probably by now, you just want to keep going the same route.
And if I were, you know, like in her friend's circle, I'd be like, look, just come to brunch with us once a month. We want to see you.
Yeah. Yeah. Or have like a in-home, like, you know, get together, slice the watermelon together.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, cool. Well, this was, I think this is a good time. Reaction videos, I think I've wanted to do for a while, and or reaction conversations. This is going to be on YouTube as well. This audio is obviously going to be on the podcast episode. Hopefully you were able to maybe relate to something that we talked about today or get a feeling of how we feel about certain things. That was a weird way to say it, but.
I am so glad, Megan, that you did not make me react to any Dave Ramsey videos today, because I think we all know that my reaction to those is pretty much always the same.
Maybe I'll put that in the lineup for next time. So thanks for joining me. I will bring you back for one of these again.
Let me know so I can brace myself.
Well, thank you, Sim, for joining me. Thanks for listening in on this Friday episode. I hope you have a lovely weekend, and we will catch you on the next one.
What if you could get fiduciary financial planning specific to your profession that's student loan aware that could change your life for a price much better than you ever dreamed possible? If that sounds good to you, go to slpwealth.com/pod for a free, no obligation, 15-minute intro call with one of our own fiduciary financial planners to see if we could be a good fit for you. This podcast is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered individualized investment advice. If a specific investment is mentioned, do not consider it a recommendation to buy or sell the investment. Seek first advice from a financial professional before implementing any strategies discussed. All investments involve risk, and past performance does not guarantee future results. Yay, compliance.